Hello and welcome to the second audio presentation from the Philosophy of Astrology. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino here with the warm-up of my discussion of the relationship between science and astrology. This is a conversation that has needed to happen for a very long time. It has not happened properly, except for one place that I can think of, which is a book called The Moment of Astrology by Jeffrey Cornelius, where he really breaks down the issues and makes it plain what is up. There was, for a long time, the idea that science would prove us astrologers right. As late as when I was going to astrology conferences, there were people who would talk about this, and you know, we were always just one study away from proof that astrology is true, and that there is some causative mechanism lurking behind the whole thing, if only science would discover it. And what Dane Rudyard explains is that this is a product of the computer age. I was reading some of his work, which is influencing my thoughts in this philosophy of astrology program. I'm going to bring him in more in a little bit later in future discussions of, in this class series, the philosophy of astrology class series. This is a series, not one thing. And he says this is a product of the computer age, that science and technology-minded young people who were born in the 40s and 50s and were coming of age in the 1960s, going to school and all that, and some of them believed in astrology because there was more astrology available and it was a thing in the culture more than it is today, kind of transferred their thinking about how, science was the thing that was going to save humanity, projected that onto astrology. And I thought that was a very insightful observation of his. You don't hear astrologers talking about this too much. I think today in our age, most astrologers understand that astrology in their minds is a belief system. I would like to break down, though, the actual relationship between science and astrology. Now, remember that there are two definitions of science. There is the formal structural definition of science, which is that which can be proven by the scientific method, that which can be proven by a formal study, and then verified. The earlier definition of science from a whole other era, the mid-14th century, according to Douglas Harper, who is the author of the Etymology Online Dictionary, one of my favorite things on the internet ever, etymolonline.com. All you have to do is type in the word etymology and the word science, and you'll get this page. I can link it, but any word, almost any word, will come up. Mid-14th century. Science meant, quote, what is known, knowledge of something acquired by study, information. Also, assurance of knowledge, certitude, certainty, from the old French, science, knowledge, learning, application, knowledge, learning, application, corpus of human knowledge. From Latin, scienta, scientia. Knowledge and knowing, expertness, from sciens, S-C-I-E-N-S, genitive scientis, intelligence, skilled. Present participle of skiri, to know, S-C-I-R-E, to know. Possibly originally to separate one thing from another, to distinguish, related to skindri, S-C-I-N-D-E-R-E, to cut, to divide. From the Proto-Indo-European root sky, S-K-E-I, to cut, to split. From Greek, schizen, to split, to rend, to cleave, meaning cleave with a cleaver. Gothic, Scandian, Old English, to separate, divide. Huh. From the 14th century, in English, as book learning, and also a particular branch of knowledge or of learning, skillfulness, cleverness, craftiness, experiential knowledge, a skill, a handicraft, a trade, collective human knowledge from the 14th century, especially that gained by systematic observation, experimentation, and reasoning. Modern, restricted sense in of, quote, body of regular methodological observations or propositions concerning a particular subject or speculation is attested from 1725. In the 17th and 18th century, this concept commonly was called philosophy. So, today, the concept that we have of science is pure empiricism. And when astrologers of, let's say, the 20th century said, we will be proven by science, what they meant was that someday empirical studies will prove us right. Now, if we take the earlier definition of science, book learning, particular branch of knowledge or learning, skillfulness, cleverness, craftiness, experiential knowledge, a skill, a handicraft, a trade, collective human knowledge, that fits astrology beautifully, particularly if it is practiced with some discipline and some rigor and a sense of observation and also applying certain principles that are valuable to researchers, for example, understanding the concept of confirmation bias. And then there are just bizarre synchronicities. For example, in the late 1990s, around 97, when I was having my progressed new moon, that is to say a new moon in my progressed horoscope, which only happens a couple of times in a lifetime, maybe three if you get to be pretty old, everybody was coming in with their progressed new moon at the same time. There's no way to advertise this. It's not like saying all Sagittarians come in 20% off. Nobody knows they're having their progressed new moon until they talk to an astrologer. And at that stage, I was, from the very first minutes of doing astrology, was reading the progressed horoscope, which is will come up possibly in part two of this discussion, because it's it relates to a scientific principle. So the old definition of science, the book learning, particular branch of knowledge or of learning, skillfulness, cleverness, craftiness, experiential knowledge, skill and handicraft, and collective human knowledge, or the body of regular methodological observations, is one thing. And then there are the empiricists who say that it is not proven by science until there is a double-blind study that establishes the truth. And at some point, scientific method is consecrated, which I don't see discussed on this entry by Douglas Harper. Scientific method says you start with a theory, you invent a hypothesis, an educated guess, or an observation from inductive logic, and then you create a test using deductive logic to prove or disprove your theory. You make an experiment, and then you do your experiment, and then you come to an observation that either you come to a conclusion of the experiment that proves or disproves your theory, and then it's not officially science until that experiment is repeated, and the whole thing is shown to be repeatable. That's the other definition of science. Now, the newer one, I would note that we do not follow this. What we call science does not follow this. Our experiments are not repeatable, for example. One scenario I will describe is what was talked about by a guy named Stephen Buston, who I had on Planet Waves FM in early 2021. And he got my attention with a paper he wrote called Walking the Walk But Not Talking the Talk, The Problem of Repeatability in Experiments using the Real-Time Quantitative Polymerase Chain Reaction, the thing that is being used to prove that there is a pandemic. And what Dr. Buston said is, this device is so bad, the polymerase chain reaction, and the there are so many problems that nobody can repeat their studies, or two-thirds or something can't repeat their studies. So we now live in an age of religiosity being imposed on science, where if a scientist says it, somebody we think is a scientist says it, it's true regardless of their use of the scientific method or lack thereof. You know, Fauci says it, it's true. Well, he's a great scientist. Well, what did he do? You know, what did he invent? You know, did he invent the anti-gravity machine? Did he, you know, invent paint or what have you? No, he's just some guy people think is a scientist. If he says it, it's true. And this is a thing that I learned fairly early in my investigative reporting career. The idea was focused by a guy named Paul Merrill. We were in Las Vegas. He's an attorney who was suing. He was on the legal team suing Monsanto, GE, and Westinghouse for poisoning the world. And he said, you know, you got one thing you've got to pay attention to and teach people to pay attention to is that there's a difference between the opinion of a scientist and finding of science. People think the opinion of a scientist is a finding of science. Well, not really. And what he meant was, obviously, if Fauci says it, that doesn't make it science. If Fauci can cite experimental data that is subjected to rigor and review and, you know, robust debate, blah, 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 that's science. And what Jeffrey Cornelius points out in his book, The Moment of Astrology, in his chapter on the New York suicide study, is that our concept of what study would prove astrology to be correct is problematic because it cannot be repeated. You may be able to do a study of all suicides in New York from whatever, 1960 to 1970, with the date of birth and the date of the suicide and all this stuff. And that failed miserably, that study. Worth reading this chapter. Worth reading the entire book. That's why it's the text for this class, The Moment of Astrology. It is the most critical eye turned toward astrology in what is also the best book on how to practice the art. I consider it one of the best books I've ever read. And love Jeffrey Cornelius. And by the way, there's on the resources page for this class is a two-day workshop with Cornelius that I personally recorded for you. Okay, so New York suicide study, total failure for many different reasons. They could find no correlation between astrology and suicide, but what was the methodology? But still, we have other problems. Even if we can design a study like this that gets a result, it does not make it repeatable. But take, for example, you. Much of astrology is people's study of their own nature. It is a form of, self-actualization work and self-study. And there's only one of you. So we can't, you know, see what your tendency at the time of your Saturn return is by having a cohort of 100 of you who all have your Saturn return at the same time. And then we all see what happens when you all, each of you, have your Saturn return. Right, so we have the repeatability problem because according to the proper current definition of empirical science, not book knowledge, not the mastery of, not the collection of careful observation and data and all this stuff, but of book knowledge, we have something, but not the empirical model, not the model where there can be a study conducted. Another famous study was the study of the Gauquelin data, which was a study of birth charts of athletes, timed charts of athletes, which showed a correlation between Mars on an angle on the midheaven or on the ascendant being associated with being a big star professional athlete. Later there were, first of all, Paul Kurtz in his attempt to disprove astrology got himself involved in a scandal of skewing the data. He tried to repeat it and show that it didn't work. But then there have been data problems. And, of course, you can't use having Mars on the midheaven or ascendant to prove that you know, or predict that someone's going to be a star athlete. I have Mars as my most elevated planet. I am a kind of an athlete. I perform athletic feats of journalism, astrology teaching, but I'm not really an athlete. So what do we have? And I think that, you know, Cornelius's reasoning is that when it comes to the personal horoscope, which is what most astrology is talking about and was talking about in the 20th century, the personal horoscope is not subject to empirical science because there's just one of you. And so this is something that you have to bear in mind. The single case is not subject to astrology. Horary is the study of the single case. The mailman knocks on the door. Back in the days of the mailman knocking on the door, hands the astrologer a letter, and the astrologer writes down the writes down the time the letter arrived, and that becomes the chart. Well, that's not very scientific, and it can only happen once. This is the important thing. If it can only happen once, it's not subject to empirical science because empirical science demands repetition. Okay, I've repeated that a number of times. I will not say that again. Maybe not. Now, let's talk about the actual relationships between science and astrology. The science mostly goes into the creation of the chart. Charts are created using mathematics. That's a field of science. They are created using the astronomical ephemeris. That is a field of science called astrophysics used to say where the planetary positions are going to be. And so the device, the physical device of the astrological chart is a scientific instrument because it is made with calculations, logarithmic tables, tables of houses, geography, latitude and longitude, sidereal time, knowing where the Earth is placed in relationship to its orbit around the sun, and then the considerable astrophysics involved in calculating the positions of 9 or 100 planets that go into the discussion. Back in the day, the planets' positions were calculated by the United States Naval Observatory. If you pick up an old ephemeris, you will still see a credit to the United States Naval Observatory for helping the publishers of the ephemeris calculate the positions of the planets. These are ephemeris equations that are used, which, you know, include the retrogrades and all this stuff. So the chart itself is a scientific instrument, and we owe a debt of gratitude to the work of people like, Kepler, who discovered that the orbits are elliptical and therefore leading to much more accurate ephemerides, to Newton, who essentially formulates gravity, to Galileo, who spots the phases of Venus and who comes close to discovering the first planet beyond Saturn, which would have been Neptune. So he invents a telescope and discovers the moons of Jupiter in winter of 1609-1610, I believe. So he contributes, and all the way on up through, I think, Einstein, who picks up immediately previous scientist theory of space-time, and Einstein proposes in his papers another theory of gravity, not a force, but a shape that the planets are following, and so forth. And so when we get to the astrological chart, when you're holding that thing in your hand with all the numbers on it, that's a scientific tool. But then something happens. It's interpreted. And it's I think, very important to not confuse the scientific nature of the device that is used to present us with the chart and the interpretation of that chart. And when astrologers say that astrology will be proven by science, what I think they mean is that their interpretations will be proven to be true by science, but I ask why we need science to prove their interpretations true, and that science, whatever that is, will come up with the force that connects people to the planets. You hear, and therefore your chart is right. And again, why would we need that? We can just test the chart out through experience. And people who debunk astrology say, well, the obstetrician in the delivery room has a greater gravitational influence on the baby than Jupiter. Okay, maybe, but Jupiter wobbles the sun. As Jupiter orbits the sun, it wobbles the whole sun. That's a pretty strong gravitational force. But who's to say that the thing that is going to establish the reality of astrology is the theory of gravity? Well, there's a lot of other scientific theories than Newtonian theories of gravity, hundreds of years old. Many, many branches of physics have evolved since then, and many spiritual observations have been made. Why say that it must be Newtonian physics, the same thing that, makes an apple fall off the tree? All right. So here's where astrology then becomes a poetic art, a descriptive art. It becomes an art, not a science. So you might say that astrology is a hybridization of science leading to the chart and art leading to the interpretation, the describing of the chart. It would be similar with a tree. Even though the tree was there, you could have scientific explanation of the tree. You could take your local oak tree and read a bunch of books about oak trees and read an analysis of the chemical composition of oak trees and the leaves of oak trees and study the seasons and how oak trees respond to the light when they start to turn yellow and drop their leaves and all that. Okay, that's nice. And then a poet can describe the oak tree. These are two completely different things. They result in different concepts of what an oak tree is. But what we do with astrology is something very interesting, unlike any other divinatory art, whether it be tarot cards or throwing yarrow sticks for the I Ching or coins or tea leaf reading, that the astrological chart is the product of advanced mathematics. It is the product of astronomical interpretation, astronomical discoveries. It is the result of the work of many great thinkers and great physicists, and it is repeatably scientifically provable. The planets are there. There's no question that they are in the exact position the chart says they are in. The charts are incredibly accurate. You can use any software. You can hand calculate with any ephemeris. That part is repeatable. But what's not repeatable is when you hand me a chart and you hand another astrologer a chart and a third astrologer a chart and a fourth astrologer a chart and you ask us to personally write what we say in the chart, we're going to come up with very different things. So here we enter what is, you might say, literature, philosophy, artistic expression, pure speculation that has nothing to do with empirical science. But what it can do is come back to an older definition of science, the one that talks about skill and learning your craft and gaining experiential knowledge. Learning a handcraft or a trade. This is something that we can do. And the observations of astrologers are important to the evolution of astrology. They used to come in the form of books and classes. And yet, those books and classes and theories and many articles, you can see themselves lacking the intellectual discipline that makes the study of something, of acquired information, more trustworthy. You can see where confirmation bias slips in. You can tell that astrologer doesn't like Sagittarians or doesn't like Capricorns, and they always write something a little bit mean to Capricorns and Sagittarians, for whatever. And also, the abuse of inductive logic. You make a couple of observations and you determine something to be true. That's not proof. There must always be I think, room for doubt and room for the new experience to emerge. Because the beauty of astrology, far from being its repeatability, is the spontaneous eruption of symbolism. This almost miraculous observation, eruption of symbolism that is then observed by the astrologer. And this thing, this actual flourishing of the symbol of the chart, is so coveted by astrologers that some will fake it. They'll fake the orgasm of astrology because they want that beauty so badly. And I would suggest that it is the kind of thing that comes slowly and sneaks up on you in moments when you are the least expecting it. And that astrology will speak to you if you make the investment and you do the work. There really is, in a class called The Philosophy of Astrology, we're going to try to get at that thing that allows the chart to speak in its own unique voice. And see if we can learn how to get closer to that. And, you know, like any artistic skill, there's the element of, gaining the discipline, for example, playing scales on your piano or guitar, and then allowing expression to enter through that discipline. And one of the most beautiful things about astrology is that it is very much a left brain, right brain, if you believe that paradigm, that reasoning mind versus sensory intuitive mind, that is where when astrology works, both are activated. In many ways, you could say that the use of, the practice of, the study of astrology is the study of the integration of these two major facets of the mind, the slowly bringing them together, because astrology that is totally cerebral is boring, and astrology that's totally intuitive may be accurate, but it's difficult to substantiate. It may resonate with someone. But astrology lends itself well to really having studied the Saturn cycle before you say something to someone about where they're at in their Saturn cycle. And that is the observational science, the book, the book knowledge, the experiential knowledge, the keeping the laboratory notebook version of science. You can't prove, what the Saturn return is about, but you can certainly observe what the Saturn return is about and say something that is philosophically meaningful to someone who is having their Saturn return. Because at the end of the day, the end of life, the end of the universe, humans are not a scientific instrument. Humans are a human, probe in consciousness. And the repeatable scientific method is a very new addition to our concept of what is supposed to be right and true. And it's so challenging, by the way, that it's basically been all but eliminated in our time. And yet, humans are here to explore, experiment, experience, play, learn, relate to ourselves, relate to one another, and to become. And this is not a feat of science. This is a a spiritual process. It is an artistic experience of self-creation. Okay, so that is my introduction to this topic. I think that in the next recording, I'm going to go through some of the modern evolutions of science, things like chaos theory, and talk about the way that science relates to astrology in that sense, not in the repeatable study sense, not in the the obstetrician exerts more gravity on the baby than Jupiter, which is scary, but rather some approaches to observing the universe that I think astrology demonstrates quite beautifully. Okay, thanks for listening, and your thoughts, comments, and reflections. Welcome, EFC at planetwaves.net. Catch you next time.